As I understand it from the notes, the argument here is that non-communicable diseases are not just individual biological failures, but conserved organism niche miscouplings, where our physical, emotional, and commercial environments actively stabilize illness.
Right, exactly.
The material makes a really strong case for this Maturana-informed framework by highlighting the limits of the standard risk factor model. So let's just jump right into how we can strengthen the delivery of these ideas.
I love that. The dense theoretical definitions of Maturana's biology must be anchored immediately in high-stakes clinical realities to prevent medical practitioners from disengaging.
Yeah, because reading through Section 4, it introduces concepts like autopoiesis and structural coupling and emotioning in a very, very abstract way.
It really does.
It kind of feels a bit like handing an architect the fundamental equations of physics before showing them the blueprint of the house, you know? It's accurate, but perhaps completely misaligned with their immediate needs. So how do we optimize this for a clinical audience?
Well, the weakness is that the shift from the urgent public health problem in the intro right to the philosophical definitions of Maturana's biology, it creates this really abrupt pacing issue.
Yeah, it's quite a whiplash.
Exactly. Clinical readers, they are deeply pragmatic. They're doing these rapid 15-minute patient consultations, so they might perceive these terms as overly abstract or just disconnected from their reality. The weakness is a reliance on textbook definitions rather than immediate clinical stakes to validate the vocabulary.
Right, so we need to prove the utility of the framework in real time, basically?
Yes, and the suggestion for improvement is to thread the theoretical definitions directly through a highly specific, relatable patient case study from the very beginning of the section.
Oh, I see.
Use the clinical example as the vehicle to define the terms.
Okay, so taking an example from later in the text, like the hypertension example from Section 8.
Yes, perfect example.
We have that patient living a life of vigilance with, you know, chronic stress, poor sleep, financial pressure. Are you saying we should introduce that patient first, right at the start of Section 4?
That is exactly what I'm saying. You introduce this patient first, and then you define autopoiesis by showing how this patient's body is actively trying to survive and self-produce under these harsh constraints.
Rather than just saying the body is malfunctioning.
Exactly. The body isn't broken. It's successfully adapting to keep the organism alive under immense socioeconomic pressure. That is autopoiesis in action.
Wow. Okay, that makes it instantly tangible. And then what about structural coupling? Because that's another heavy term.
You do the exact same thing. You define structural coupling by illustrating how the patient's vascular tone has adapted to the recurrent stress of their specific niche.
Ah, so you show how the smooth muscle cells in the arteries are physically thickening to withstand the high blood pressure.
Right. Their blood vessels are quite literally structurally coupled to their socioeconomic environment.
That makes absolute sense. So the stress isn't just floating around, it's physically altering the anatomy.
And then for emotioning, you show how the patient's chronic vigilance, that constant state of fear and stress, actually organizes their physiological response.
So emotioning isn't just having a feeling, it's a full body state of organization.
Exactly. It narrows their domain of action, spikes their cortisol, causes them to retain sodium, and raises their allostatic load. By defining the biology through a patient they see every day, the abstract vocabulary transforms into a vital diagnostic tool.
Right. So we've grounded the micro theories of Maturana in a specific patient to make them real. But just as those micro theories need a patient to ground them, the macro societal arguments need a specific geographical anchor, which brings us to the structure of the whole white paper.
Relegating the Caribbean and small island developing states application to the end of the document obscures the most compelling real-world evidence of a pathogenic niche.
Okay, but let me push back on that for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
I noticed the incredible detail in the St. Kitts and Nevis analysis, but is there a risk that focusing solely on the Caribbean context too early might alienate a global reader? Like someone who operates in a massive urban center like New York or London?
I get that concern, but I'd argue that the specific illuminates the universal.
Okay, how so?
Well, the weakness right now is that the paper outlines these massive, abstract, systemic issues like commercial determinants, globalized, unhealthy commodity systems, climate stress in sections 6 and 11.
Right, those sections are very dense.
Super dense. However, the perfect synthesis of all these forces is the Caribbean and Cid's context in section 13. But it's treated almost like an appendix.
Oh, I see what you mean. It's buried at the back.
Exactly. This structural choice forces the reader to absorb heavy systemic theory without a tangible, macro-level case study to picture. The suggestion for improvement is to pull the Caribbean context forward and weave it throughout the earlier sections as the primary running case study for structural miscoupling.
Which mirrors exactly how the individual patient case study grounds the clinical theory.
Precisely. You use the island as a closed system where the cause and effect of a toxic environment are highly visible.
Okay, so let's look at concrete examples of how to do this. When discussing the commercial and economic niche in section 6,
you immediately cite St. Kitts and Nevis.
Right. Instead of speaking generally about global markets, you show their dependence on imported ultra-processed foods and tourism pressures as the lived example of this concept.
Yes, you show how an economic shift physically alters a population's metabolic baseline. You show the arable land being bought up for tourism, local agriculture collapsing, and the population being systematically forced into shelf-stable, processed diets.
That's a powerful image. And what about the climate aspect? When explaining climate and ecology stress in section 11, how do we anchor that?
You use the specific PAHO data regarding the island's vulnerability to hurricanes and sea level rise to show exactly how ecological disruption directly forces biological adaptation.
Right, because I was wondering about the actual biological mechanism there. How does a weather event force biological adaptation?
Think about it. When a Category 5 hurricane hits, it destroys the local infrastructure. The power grid fails. Fresh food rots.
Wow, yeah.
The population is forced into absolute reliance on whatever relief food is shipped in, which is almost always exclusively high glycemic, ultra-processed carbohydrates.
So their diet changes overnight out of sheer survival.
But it's not just the diet. You have to combine that carbohydrate influx with sheer psychological terror. The trauma of the disaster spikes the population's cortisol levels.
And cortisol signals the body to dump glucose into the bloodstream for fight or flight energy.
Exactly. But there's nowhere to flee. So the pancreas has to pump out massive amounts of insulin to deal with both the stress-induced glucose and the shelf-stable carbohydrate diet.
Do that over a prolonged recovery period, and you generate widespread insulin resistance.
That is exactly the mechanism. The climate event literally becomes a metabolic event.
That is fascinating. By doing this, by weaving this narrative early on, I assume we can also move the visual aids up, like the Cid's niche map in Figure 7?
Yes, absolutely. That map can be introduced much earlier to visualize the pathogenic niche in action. It gives the reader a vital anchor for all the complex systems theory.
Right. So we've grounded the theory in a specific patient, and we've grounded the environment in a specific island. Now let's look closely at the intervention itself, the care method, and see how it holds up against these intense real-world constraints.
This is a crucial area. The framework relies heavily on finding a non-forcing, feasible change in the clinical encounter, but it must explicitly address how to navigate scenarios where structural barriers completely eliminate feasible options.
Let me ask you about the R in the care method. Reopen a feasible domain of action.
Right.
That makes sense in theory, but could the evidence also support a different conclusion? I mean, is there a risk that seeking a non-forcing change could just be interpreted by overwhelmed clinicians as lowering the bar or giving up on standard biomedical targets when a patient's environment is too difficult?
I think that is a very valid concern. And the weakness here is that while the shift from compliance to co-creation is beautifully articulated, the paper sort of assumes that small, non-forcing change is always waiting to be discovered through good dialogue.
Right. Like if the clinician just asks the right questions, they'll find a solution.
Exactly. But the weakness is a lack of focus on the hardest edge of this method. What happens when the niche is so rigid, like severe poverty, food deserts, post-disaster disruption, that no traditional lifestyle change is possible?
Yeah, like if a doctor tells a patient to eat more vegetables and the patient says, "My corner store only sells hot Cheetos and soda," and they don't have a car, the framework just stalls out.
It stalls out completely. So the suggestion for improvement is to expand the care method section to explicitly model how a clinician operates when hitting a hard structural wall.
Okay, so what does that look like?
It means demonstrating the clinician's role in leveraging community assets when individual action is blocked.
So stepping outside the traditional clinical boundaries.
Yes. For example, include a brief dialogue script or a troubleshooting branch within the care pathway.
Okay, let's walk through a concrete example of that. Let's say the medical recommendation is physical activity, but the structural constraint is unsafe, unwalkable streets in a dense urban environment, or maybe an island post-hurricane.
Under the old model, the doctor prescribes a walk, the patient doesn't do it because it's dangerous, and they get labeled non-compliant. Under the basic care model, they realize it's dangerous, but they might not know what to do next.
Right.
So, show how the clinician, acting as a co-designer, pivots from prescribing individual exercise to connecting the patient with a specific distinctive small island asset, which is something mentioned later in the paper.
Oh, like a church walking group or a community center?
Exactly. Make it clear that if the niche is fully blocking the change, the clinical intervention becomes about altering the niche's boundary using social prescribing rather than forcing the biology.
That's brilliant. It shifts the burden. It saves the clinician from burnout because their job becomes finding the safe harbor within the toxic world rather than failing to force a biological change that the environment won't allow.
Right. It gives them an actionable path forward even when things seem impossible.
Well, this material is highly insightful and conceptually rich. To maximize its impact, the focus really should be on grounding the abstract concepts in tangible realities from page one.
Absolutely.
So just to recap the main actionable suggestions we've talked about today. Number one, introduce a specific patient case study early to demonstrate the clinical urgency of Maturana's biological definition.
Right. Bring that hypertensive patient up front.
Exactly. Number two, elevate the Caribbean and SIDS application from the back of the paper to serve as a running macro-level case study for pathogenic niches.
Showing those commercial and climate pressures in action.
Yes. And number three, bolster the care methods section by including concrete examples of how clinicians and patients can troubleshoot severe structural barriers when searching for a feasible domain of action.
Using social prescribing and community assets.
Spot on. We warmly invite the listener to implement these structural adjustments and submit the revised material back in for a future critique. Refining this organism niche framework will profoundly impact how practitioners approach chronic disease.
I completely agree.
Thanks for walking through this with me.
Thanks for having me. It was a great discussion.